and welcome to Worlds Apart. NATO's first Secretary General famously said that the bloc's purpose was to keep the Russians out and the Germans down. The war in Ukraine seems to have fully accomplished this goal, but is it enough to still keep the Americans in? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Max Otte, a German economist, entrepreneur, and political activist. Mr. Otte, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being here.
My great pleasure.
Now, I know that you said before that after the end of the Cold War, Germany was uniquely positioned to be both the mediator and the economic bridge between East and West. And for a while, it served that function, that role relatively well. But everything changed when push came to shove in Ukraine. Why do you think the Ukrainian issue of all others has become such a watershed?
Well, I actually wrote my dissertation about Germany's positioning after the end of the Cold War at Princeton University, and I examined very closely Germany's position. And that was my hope, that Germany would be a mediator between East and West and a bridge between East and West. And I was at the Alon when President Putin announced the free trade area from Lisbon to Vladivostok. So that would have been a great idea. But of course, that was not meant to be. So we could see that for a long time that there were forces of division, and this was intentional. One could see it with the Maidan Putsch 2014, when the IMF granted Ukraine an emergency loan, and that was outside the statutes of the IMF. So somebody had a great interest in keeping the antagonistic relationship between Ukraine and Russia going, or exacerbating it. So that was one thing. I also noticed in 2008, in the South Ossetian crisis, I noticed a column of tanks in endless circles on the TV. So that were pictures that were deliberately planted. So I would think that certain actors had a strong interest in not having that happen. And then finally, it all came out in 2014 mm-hmm. and then in 2022.
Mm-hmm. Now, of all the nations, I would think that Germany, more than anyone else, must have understood not only Russia's security sensibilities, but also Moscow's historical aversion to the nationalistic, if not neo-Nazi tendencies of the Ukrainian leadership and the Ukrainian political project. Why do you think these ideological leanings of the Ukrainian state, with its open, at times very demonstrative reverence of the World War II criminals, why do you think they were received so approvingly, particularly in Germany?
Yes, and even sabotaging a NATO country now was Ukraine's oil facilities. So in West Germany, I would say there was indeed something called re-education after 1948, 1949. So the story was that we were brought democracy by the Americans. And in East Germany, of course, it was we were brought socialism by the Soviet Union. So both parts developed separately. And when I was in school, I learned more about, for example, Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, then Frederick the Great and Otto von Bismarck. So in some ways, the whole foreign policy doctrine of the Federal Republic was one about NATO and European integration. Those mm-hmm. were basically pillars or foundational structures of the German foreign policy doctrine. So then nobody asked the question, what is Germany's national interest ahead of that? And then, of course, if you define your national interest, you can then start talking about alliances and structures. But those structures were hardwired into the political code. And you see that until today, when West German elites are pretty much wired by this code and don't think in broader terms. Of course, in East Germany it was a bit different, and then the socialism collapsed. But people in East Germany are more aware of all of this.
But Mr. Otte, also being from St. Petersburg myself, I want to bring up that there was also, you know, a period in our bilateral history towards the end of the Soviet era and immediately after the Soviet collapse, when the cooperation between Germany and Russia, and particularly, you know, around the Baltic Sea area, was actually burgeoning. Not only these gas pipelines were built, but there were also many historical exchanges. And I remember as a young journalist, Vladimir Putin at that time was deputy mayor of St. Petersburg. And we were receiving not only lots of visitors, lots and lots of German companies operating in the city. In fact, German was the most popular foreign language taught in St. Petersburg schools, not English, but German. And yet Germany was prepared to lose all that lucrative economic partnership with Russia. And we haven't seen much public regret about it yet. Berlin's policy vis-a-vis Moscow still remains pretty belligerent, even though the situation on global energy markets is very dire. It looks like Germany is resolved to suffer, or to use the words of Lord Ismay, being kept down. Why is that?
Well, of course, I was hoping that this would continue, and it took a long time to destroy this friendship and this partnership. It took decades, if you think about it. It took more than two decades to really ruin it. And always I was hoping that at some point the trends would be reversed. But once again, I mean, we had re-education, then we have media elites and Western elites firmly entrenched in Western circles, in Western influence circles. And so I guess Gerhard Schröder was the last German chancellor who really stood up for German interests and tried to do what he could, both with regards to the Iraq war and North Stream and relations to Russia. So I could see and I could observe this. I wrote my dissertation more than 30 years ago. And since then, and even then, we had the first round of NATO enlargement. I could see the consistency of the forces working to destroy this friendship. And it's saddening. It's saddening. I hope we can at some point really revive it. I would certainly hope so, because that would be very good for Europe. It would be very good for both countries. It would be very good for the world. But right now, it looks pretty bleak.
Now, I heard you say that if a state for a prolonged period of time doesn't use its potential wisely, it becomes schizophrenic and then moves to abolish itself. And I find this analogy very apt, because schizophrenia at its core is the absence of functioning ego, which in state politics would be national interest. And indeed, in clinical psychology, schizophrenia is linked to suicidal behavior. Moreover, we know now that it is often preceded by a very large episode of transgenerational trauma, something that hasn't been resolved psychologically in generations for many decades. Do you think that may be the case with the German collective psyche as well?
Let's give two episodes of transgenerational trauma. My great-aunt married. Her husband came back from the front. This was in 1945 in March. And next day they had to leave because the Soviet tanks were next door. So my grand-uncle went back to the front and she went on a wagon west. And the other one is that my aunt actually witnessed one of the death marches from Auschwitz in early 45. So I've had some firsthand accounts of history. I'm not sure I use the word schizophrenic, but certainly Germany has completely lost the sense of self-interest. And that is nowadays is being branded as right-wing radical. If somebody dares to raise the issue of national self-interest, if somebody dares to raise concern about what's happening in Iran, if somebody dares to argue for peace in Ukraine, that is in German mainstream definition right now, the definition of right wing. So indeed, Germans have perfected the art of self-hate as they have perfected some other things. Maybe that's the last, I don't hope so, but maybe that's the last we see of the German soul or the German national character, because in some ways, of course, we have the reputation of being perfectionists, and now we're being perfectionist in demolishing ourselves. And even the so-called conservative government, and I've known the chancellor for a long time personally, and he's 10 years ago, I could give interviews to German state media about BlackRock and his involvement with BlackRock. But anyway, so even the chancellor, who supposedly was a conservative, continues with the demolition of nuclear power plants and with this economic and political suicide of Germany. So It's looking very, very bad for Germany, and there's nothing much left. I mean, I must say it this openly.
Now, you mentioned the conflict in Iran, and if you compare the conflict in Ukraine and the multiple engagements that Israel has initiated over the last couple of months and years, the conduct on the ground is markedly different. I mean, there is, you know, Israel is acting not only very aggressively, but with very, very little regard for international law, for collateral damage, etc. And yet, I would argue that the Russians in this regard are far more disciplined in how they're using their military power. And yet, we don't hear any criticism of the Israeli international conduct and the way it carries out its military operations. Why is that?
I've just seen the German ambassador to Israel issue a very balanced statement, but a statement that deplores the violence on both sides. It's still pretty much pro-Israel, but it has some semblance of balance. And very promptly, he gets chided by the Israeli foreign minister for this statement. Mm-hmm. So I would say we do have indeed a very, very narrow sphere of opinion and very narrow room to discuss this. And we can see what happens to people that are criticizing or taking action. And I think about Jacques Baud, that was more, of course, the Ukraine conflict, but also the judge of the International Court of Justice that was banned from, basically cut off from all finances. Mm-hmm. So we do see fairly robust sanctioning of individuals who dare to do so. So it's no wonder that a few people speak out. Francesca Albanese is bedeviled, and so it's no wonder that criticism is muted, because it's actively being muted. Mm-hmm.
Now, when Iran was attacked for the first time last year, Chancellor Merz publicly commented that Israel was doing the dirty work for the West. But this time around, as you said, Germany sought to distance itself from the American and Israeli actions. What outcome do you think the German leadership is secretly betting on?
Merz is betting on whatever he's betting on at that moment. I don't think the man has an inner compass. I mean, he was a lobbyist all his life, so he swayed this way, that way. I mean, he basically threw overboard all his election promises after he was being elected, even before when he entered, when he raised the debt level to new heights. So I have no idea. I just hope that reason prevails.
Okay, well, let's definitely hope for that. But in the meantime, Mr. Otto, we have to take a very short break. We will be back to the discussion in a couple of moments. Stay tuned.
There's no end in sight over how you're going to continue to destroy the Earth.
It's the case of the madness of the people.
I tried to go to the gym, but I'm certainly not ready to fight Russia.
This is all so absurd.
This is third world lunacy. Brainwashing.
As Ursula von der Leyen likes to say, we have the tools.
Why don't we just start with stability and business deals?
What planet are you living on, man?
We have very good propaganda in our press here in Europe.
I think we don't know the aftermath.
Anytime that you're not allowed to ask questions, you should ask all of the questions.
The more questions asked, the better the answers will be.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Max Otte, German economist, entrepreneur, and political activist. Mr. Otte, Germany's national development after World War II had been premised on America's guidance and security presence in Europe, but that can no longer be taken for granted. The Americans themselves don't want to be in. Trump has a strong distaste for what he sees as the European freeloading. And more broadly, I think America's strategic interests lie elsewhere. Where do you think it leaves Germany and its future developmental trajectory?
Well, of course, the Cold War was a somewhat stable situation. So Germany was allowed to economically develop because our land army was needed and our economic system was being left alone. But since the early 1990s, we were systematically treated as a competitor. And our economic system was being dismantled. The system of interlocking companies was dismantled. We got US-style accounting for the companies, all kinds of things that had been done. A lot of the company has been sold out, so most of the large publicly listed companies are have a majority of foreign holders, and as largest shareholders, even BlackRock, which is, I mean, this is basically the economy of a provincial country. So the Trump administration, and I'm also a U.S. citizen, and I voted for Trump three times, but he did a 180-degree turn a couple of months ago, maybe even last summer, when he started to bomb Iran because he said he would not start any wars in the Middle East, which in some ways is correct because Netanyahu started it, but Trump went along. So I would think that there's still enough potential left for Germany to take care of itself. I don't see Russia having any interest in Western Ukraine, in Poland. Of course, Polish fears are very high, and there is an antagonism towards both Germany and Russia. But I don't see Russia having the interest and the resources to be aggressive towards Western Europe. Vladimir Putin has said so himself that the country just doesn't have the resources. And if you look at the population figures and GDP and so on and so forth, so I don't see a need for NATO to exist, really, because it has outlived its purpose. It went from a defensive alliance to an offensive alliance. And NATO General Secretary Mark Rutte just said he would form a coalition of willing to open the Strait of Hormuz. Good luck with that. I hope he doesn't succeed. But he's, of course, fully a NATO apparatchik, as you could say. The same with his predecessor, Stoltenberg. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that you believe that Germany needs to develop its own sense of national identity and direction. And it looks like economically and geostrategically, the situation is dire enough for that. Do you think that the current energy crisis and the increasingly desperate situation that Germany finds itself in would provide enough of an impetus for some reflection?
In some ways, that's actually the only hope, that the situation gets dire enough and chaotic enough and bad enough so that indeed the pain is growing so much that there should be some change. And I mean, we could compare it to Russia in the late 1990s, where some of the similar situation took place. So that's the only hope I do have. So I guess for Germany itself, it has to get worse before it gets better.
Now, let me ask you specifically about energy sourcing, because I remember, you know, I think it was a little bit more than a decade ago that we had this so-called gas war between Russia and Ukraine, which led to minor interruptions in the flow of gas, natural gas to Europe. And back then it was referred to as the gas war and deemed as a major source of energy insecurity and instability. And yet, when we look around the world right now, when you cannot not only be sure about the day that your energy supplies will be delivered, you cannot be sure that the source of those energy supplies, those oil fields, will be intact. I think that sort of reframes the definition of energy security a little bit. At least it should for same people who need to develop their economies. Is it producing any sort of deliberation of what is actually energy security in Germany?
Well, of course, the opposition party, the AfD, but also BSW, so this two opposition parties, and the AfD is now the second largest party, raised this issue. But the governing coalition, and even those parties that are not in government, have formed, so to say, almost a unitary front to prevent the AfD and their ideas to having any political significance. But this is serious. And I do remember the first oil shock of 1973-74, I was 10, when we could cycle on the Autobahn, and we might see something like this again. I remember that at the beginning of the war in Ukraine, Germans were admonished to turn down the heat, and the public baths were turned down. So we were basically given some kind of war talk. Fortunately, that has slowed down a bit, because this war has been dragging on, this terrible war, for a while now. The situation is rather serious.
But even if Germany comes around on the issue of Russian energy, I'm not sure that option will still be there, because I can see that Moscow is now very busy building alternative energy partnerships, particularly with Asia. It's actually using its reserves to lend some help to those nations, hoping that it will lead to long-term partnerships. I just wonder, I mean, when it comes to sourcing industrial production, you need to make some calculations. I mean, the energy doesn't appear out of a thin air. Even the solar energy or wind energy doesn't appear like that. What is the German leadership counting on when it comes to sourcing your industry?
The German leadership is really not thinking about this, and this is terrible. They are not thinking about that. It's only the opposition that is thinking about it. One string of Nord Stream 2 is still open, and I would think for Russia, it would be a good idea to not only send the energy east, to send some energy west. So if this ever ends, I would think we could start again at a lower level, but because then there will not be so much German industry left if this drags on for a while. I mean, a lot of German industry has been destroyed already, but certainly, I mean, you could open up any time again, maybe not at full speed, but and then see how it goes from there.
But I would think that this expression of goodwill on the part of Russia, holding out a hope for rebuilding bilateral or, you know, pan-European relationship, is also conditioned on the outcome of the war in Ukraine. And clearly, the conflict in Iran is influencing it, not only in terms of strategic dynamics, but also in terms of armaments, ammunition, etc. How do you think it is likely to affect what's going on the Ukrainian battlefield?
Well, we don't know. And I mean, war has the fog of war, as a German philosopher or war theorist Karl von Clausewitz said. So there's a fog of war. And there's so many turns, even in the special military operation in Ukraine, that I mean, I'm not a military expert, I'm an economics expert, but there's been so many turns that it's very hard to predict. But my prediction would be that, of course, some of the resources that have been used up in Ukraine are now being diverted to Iran on the side of the West. So I would hope that the war in Ukraine would come to an end at some point, not too much in the distant future, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's really one of those situations where it's very hard to make predictions.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about Europe more broadly, French President Emmanuel Macron has long talked about the EU's need for, quote unquote, strategic autonomy. Given the bloc's impotence when it comes to resolving the conflict on its borders in Ukraine and its complete irrelevance to the crisis in the Middle East, plus its total inability to influence its main partner in the United States, what do you think this strategic autonomy is supposed to signify? Because it, for the lack of a better word, it seems like a strategic irrelevance than autonomy at this point of time.
Well, French presidents are prone to making great statements and grand statements. La Grande Nation is a bit there. The last chance for strategic autonomy was the creation of the euro, and basically Helmut Kohl got it wrong, because if there had been a deal, a West German nuclear umbrella, so French nuclear force under the joint European command, and then the euro, then that would have been the possibility of a true European unification, which Germans really wanted, because next to NATO, European unification was very high on the German list of, on top of German foreign policy objectives. But of course, there's no substance to these words. Mm-hmm. These are grand words that won't happen, because mm-hmm. right now Europe is disintegrating. I mean, political Europe, and the new foreign policy doctrine of the Trump administration is accelerating that, because basically it says Europe is irrelevant as an actor and we will deal with nations on a one-by-one basis. Mm-hmm.
Let me quote one more grand statement, because when the EU was established in the aftermath of the World War II devastation, it was thought that integrating Europe's economies would make war, in the words of the French foreign minister Robert Schuman, not merely unthinkable, but materially impossible. And I think the latter, the second part of that statement, is definitely true. The Europe doesn't have capabilities of fighting a war yet. But when it comes to the unthinkable part, there seems to be actually a counter movement to egg on multiple conflicts, not only with Russia, for example, but also the European Union or European nations have supported multiple military engagements of the United States previously, not only like in Libya, in Syria, and many other nations around the world. What is it about the European thinking, European mentality, European psychology that seems to advocate for the absence of war in rhetoric, but at the same time keep supporting war when it comes to other nations?
Well, I guess that's how our leaders want to get some feeling of autonomy. I mean, we saw this when Trump was discussing to withdraw support for Ukraine and withdraw for the war. I mean, Starmer, Merz, and Macron got together and said, well, no, it's our burden to continue this war. These are grand gestures. This is the hope to unify Europe against a common enemy when the world is really basically rearranging. So I think it's a feeble hope. I certainly hope it won't bear any fruits, but I guess that's what they were thinking and hoping.
Well, Mr. Otte, thank you very much for sharing your analysis with us.
My pleasure.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again next week on Worlds Apart.